and the nose is here. Anyway, and this was apparently where somebody lived, and this is where people went in to do other things, I suppose. We don't know the function of most Maya buildings, actually. I want to go back now to 1946. This is the first of the relatively recent discoveries. Bonampak. The site was really well known. This is down in Chiapas near the Usumacinta River. And the site here was well known because the Lacandon Maya live here. And all the time they used to come into the woods and burn incense in the doorways of these buildings. Well, United Fruit Company wanted to make a film one time in 1946. So they sent a filmmaker named Giles Healy down there. And he walked in. He knew that Bonampak had ruins. That's why he went there, and he took a couple of Lacandon with him. And he knew that an American expatriate, Carlos Fry, had discovered the site in 1940 or so. He had come south to avoid the draft in World War II, and he later drowned in the Usumacinta River. But he missed this building, Carlos did. And Giles was walking down, he was walking by here. I went back there in the 70s with Giles Healy so he could retrace his path for me. And we walked up here and we climbed up the steps here. And he said at that point, he and the Lacandon with him saw a deer run over here into the woods. So they followed it, but they were taken aback when a jaguar jumped out of an opening in the building here and started chasing the deer. So they paused in their pursuit of the deer, and they went into the room. And there they saw a miracle. They saw paintings on the wall. The human figures there were about a yard tall, and the ceremonies and all that they depicted filled three rooms. It was just incredible. So they looked, here was a battle in the jungle. And up until then, the dominant archaeologists and Mayanists thought that the Maya were a peaceful and group unlike any other that ever lived. They were always standing on pyramids, they said, looking at the sky and figuring out time. They worshiped time, and they were always counting the days and looking at the stars, and they never did ordinary things like warfare and things like this. And when it was published in 1955, it was said to be not a war, but a simple raid, and just a little aberration. But anyway, the thing showed this battle in the jungle. It showed the arraignment of prisoners. It was painted in July of 692, and it shows King Chanmuan I standing there with his spear, and here's the royal court, the nobles. Here's a bunch of prisoners, probably scribes, because they controlled a lot of the power, because they could write and they could read. And once you'd captured a rival kingdom's scribes and immobilized them by pulling out their fingernails so their hands bled like this, you were winning. Anyway, that's what they think now. Come back in 5 years, we'll figure out something else. The murals, of course, any time anybody digs up anything or finds something and tries to save it, it's an automatic guarantee of doom. And this happened with Bonampak. First thing they did was build a tin shelter over the temple, thus modifying the balance between moisture and dryness that had saved the murals in the first place. And they'd saved them for 1,200 years. Well, they started flaking off. Plus, this artist that they sent in to do the drawings in 1946, the way to do it then to bring out dim murals was to throw buckets of kerosene on them. And this didn't help a bit. Anyway, we went back in there in the 80s with pigment chemists and different kinds of cameras and stuff and tried to restore them with computers, and this was the result. It's about as good as they get. Shows the orchestra, guy dressed up like a crawfish or something here. Wooden trumpets. They've just found a vase that shows somebody playing stringed instruments, so they had those too. Drums, rattles. Well, the women are all sitting on a throne in their royal robes, running thorns and things through their teeth in order to drop blood on rolls of paper here in the pottery, which they would later burn and offer to the supernaturals in the sky. And all of that was covered with captions. Then there's Palenque. This is a picture, I just threw it in because you seldom get a picture of Palenque after a volcanic ash fall. And this shows Palenque architecture better than any photograph I know of. The Temple of the Inscriptions here, where the other great discovery took place. This was only a few years after Bonampak, after Giles Healy got out of there. The Mexican government sent Alberto Ruiz down, and when he got there, the temple looked like this, 1952. And Alfonso Caso, who was the head of the Mexican archaeological entity then, told Alberto to dig in this biggest mound because it was likely there that he would find early stuff, and they needed a ceramic sequence. So Alberto went over there to look at it and see what it looked like. And he walked in the temple. Now, a bunch of people had been in that temple. Antonio del Rio in 1787, John Lloyd Stevens in 1839, Frederick Catherwood, de Charnay, all these people. But Alberto, even Franz Blom, he noticed that the floor was not like any temple he'd ever seen. The floor was not plaster and gravel, but it was made out of big flagstones, about the size of 4x8, 2x4s, about 6 inches thick, with plugs in them. So he moved one of them. None of the others had thought to do this or thought to question it. And he saw a step. Now this was in 1948. Toward the end of the season, of course. And they came back the next year and they started going down the staircase. They had to figure it out because it cost a lot of money to dig a Maya temple. The budget was a big question, but he took a chance. By the end of the 1949 season, he had gone down 23 steps. This is the stairway with a vaulted ceiling. The stairs had all this was completely choked with rubble and cement and offerings of skeletons and jade and stuff in pottery. And he'd gotten 23 steps down. 1950, he got down another 25 steps or so. Got to a landing back there. Thought it was the end. But then he turned around, the steps went down the other way. 1951, went down. Early 1952, they came into a room about, 16 by 20 feet. Vaulted ceiling, nothing in it. And one of the stonemasons, Juan Chablé, a guy from Oshkutskab, Yucatan, who knew stonework, looked over on the side of the wall and saw kind of a triangular thing. And said, why don't we try to move that and see what that is? So they did, and it revealed a chamber with a gigantic sculpture in the middle of it, like a big table. They looked in and that's what they saw. They didn't see Alberto there. Alberto came back. He came back 25 years after this discovery. But on that June the 15th, 1952, which I remember because it was the first day I started work at the Mulberry site in South Carolina, the age of 17, Alberto shined his flashlight in here and saw this big stone. And he thought, what in the world can that be? Because remember now, nobody had ever found a royal tomb in a Maya pyramid. He didn't know it was a tomb. He thought it was a big altar. They were about ready to have the International Congress of Americans meetings over in Cambridge, England. So Alberto wrote a paper about this big altar with a sacrificial victim on the top. There's a picture of the guy. And Alberto got back from Cambridge and went back to Palenque, and again Juan Chablé said, Don Alberto, why don't you drill a hole in that big stone and see if it's hollow? And he did, and it was. And so they took about 15 automobile jacks and put them all around the overlapping edge of this 5-ton stone and raised it, and there was a skeleton covered with jade and stuff. So they found it, and then they saw this, tried to figure out what it was. We know now that it's the ruler, Kinich Hanab Pakal II, rising out of the underworld. There's the monster of the underworld with the big jaws and he's going up and becoming a tree or a plant on his way to the sky. So other people would say it's 1951 or 1960 or so, it was published as a rocket ship of an alien craft that had come to the Earth. Somebody turned it sideways and said it was an alien motorcycle that had come from some other part of the world. And so anyway, and somebody wrote that it was a map of Lake Titicaca on the Bolivian border. And it's kind of hard to see that. But anyway, it turned out to be a wonderful sculpture with the paint still on it and the tool marks and everything. Cesar Sáenz, who walked in there with Alberto that morning, found this head underneath the sarcophagus. It was up on four legs, and the head had been snapped off a portrait gallery and thrown under there. But it's one of the great sculptures. Realistic. Two heads were found. They recently found, just last week, that the two heads were apparently based on life casts of the king's face, done at the age of 15 and at the age of 81. The palace, everything else in Palenque started making sense then, because they started reading the glyphs. Henry Berlin said these are names on the sarcophagus, and these are people they're talking about, not just a bunch of priests and gods and things. Oval tablet in House E of the palace suddenly turned into a scene, and the glyphs say it. Here's the king being crowned by his mother when he's 15 years old. And he's named here, Kinich Hanapakal, and his mother here. Anyway, the discoveries continue. This is the sort of the panhandle of Guatemala, where much of it takes place. Up here, the site of Rio Azul, and down here, Dos Pilas. I want to talk a little bit about the very heart of it in here, which is the El Mirador Basin. I want to talk briefly, because in the 1960s, just as we were absorbing the news of Palenque and the beginning of the decipherment of hieroglyphs into really meaning, I mean, people had been working on it for 100 and some years, but it was only in the 60s and 70s that we began to really read them. So anyway, the Mirador Basin, that's what it looks like. Look like then. Right now we're losing about, you know, a huge amount of acreage every day to resettlement and deforestation. But anyway, there's about probably 20 lost cities in this view, dominated here by this big lump of tree growth, which is the big pyramid at El Mirador. There was a site here that in around AD 200 held about 60,000 people. Looks sort of like that. The only thing wrong with the restoration is there probably wasn't a tree in sight, because they'd used it all for firewood and to make plaster and stucco and stuff like that. But anyway, this thing's 260 feet tall. One of the largest buildings except for the Great Pyramid of the Sun at Teotihuacan. But this stuff keeps coming out of the woods and caves, our underworld. Natunich Cave started appearing in the Guatemala newspapers in 1980. We went down there, that's us on the slope over there. There was a little teeny opening back here that we squeezed through and went about half a mile back into the cave. And all over it there were paintings of a guy playing ball in the underworld. Nine is the number, there it is, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Guy contemplating a conch shell, which was the symbol of the underworld. A thing saying that they'd come down here on a certain date to witness a ceremony in July of 731. And this was a ceremony, and they were from a town called Mopam. Here's another date. Somebody else came in to witness a ceremony. The witness verb is just a picture of an eyeball with a little thing sticking out of it. Inscriptions like this. We even found an edited inscription with a glyph added with a little thing under it. And at the very back of the cave was a picture of the Hero twins. This is one of them. And we're talking here 731, and we're talking the guys that went into the church at Chichicastenango 1,200 years later. So anyway, it's all the same thing. Hit the wrong button. Yeah. Anyway. And so recent explorations have taken us up into here. And it was a couple of years ago that Bill Saturno, one of my son's students at Harvard at the time, he was going from here, Washak Tun, over to Shultun to draw some monuments. And they got lost and it started raining. And so the guides didn't know where they were either, so they wandered up into here. All of a sudden they came upon this big mound of rubble. And the looters, of course, had already been there, because the looters who had all lost their jobs from the archaeologists, but they knew where the tombs were, had gone into the mound in a slot trench. So Bill went in there to keep from dying of thirst and just to sit in the shade. And when he was sitting there waiting on the people to come back with some water, he hoped, he shined his light up and saw a picture of the maize god being dressed in a mural. And he thought, Lord. So he came out of there and he couldn't tell anybody about it until he got back to Cambridge, Massachusetts. Got a small grant, went back, and they found the San Bartolo murals. They found the North Wall. They've just found and reconstructed the West Wall. But the North Wall is kind of interesting. It was painted in 300 BC. This is way back. And it shows the birth of humanity from a water gourd. All the little babies with their umbilical cords coming out and forming a quincunx, the four quarters in the center, being supervised by the feathered serpent. Over to the side, there's a cave. This is the cave. And this is a fang, a stalactite. There's the eyeball. There's a jaguar eating some birds out of the nest up here and a few critters sticking their heads out. Snake. And this is a big snake head breathing out. Somebody sitting in the cave with a bowl full of tamales or something here. There's the maize god being dressed. That's the first view that Saturno had of these things. And there's his wife and some other characters around there. And here comes offerings from the sun god and from another supernatural figure. And here's another serpent coming out of that serpent's mouth. And this apparently is the birth of breath and life. So the west wall is even more incredible. We're just getting the preliminary drawings of that. Some have been published a little bit, but we're getting ready to publish the big thing. But it shows one of the hero twins getting ready to set the four trees at the corners of the universe. Anyway, it just keeps happening. Tourists go to Tikal now and usually don't realize everything that happened there. But the Indians and the Maya around Sololá and all Panachel and other places still revere caves and burn the incense at their entrances for the underworld. And they still have market in Akanke, Yucatan, with a 5th century pyramid back here, just as they probably did. And the people still wear textiles with the calendrical numbers in them, the 260-day year, the 365-day solar year, etc. And they go to cemeteries that combine the cross and the tree. This is the one at Chamula in Chiapas. And just like the royalty 1,200 years before, going into the underworld in his little canoe, wrapped up in the umbilical cords of his ancestors, carried by the Patler gods. And he'll come back as the sun. So, we keep finding out more stuff. Last week, Michael Smythe found an early pyramid at a site called Scotch in the area of northern Yucatan, near Uxmal, that appears to date back to 600 BC or thereabouts, with stone built of stones the size of that table over there. And Karen Bassey up at the University of Calgary has just figured out the whole iconography, all the mountains in the Chiapas Highlands and how they connected into Maya mythology. So it goes on and on. And I'm going to stop now because I don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. And someday maybe I'll be able to tell you about it. Thank you.